You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The following episode contains disturbing and graphic accounts of survivor experiences. It may not be suitable for younger audiences. Please listen with care.
From iHeartRadio, London Audio, and executive producer Paris Hilton, this is Trapped in Treatment. We're your hosts. I'm Rebecca Mellinger-Grown.
And I'm Caroline Cole. Every week, we seek to untangle the truths of the troubled teen industry, an industry that claims to help teens, but instead leaves them with a lifetime of trauma. We have one mission: to make sure that no child has to experience the hell that is the troubled teen industry. We are fighting to make these voices heard because we have been silent for too long. This season is all about WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools, one of the largest networks of troubled teen facilities in the industry, masterminded by one man, Robert Litchfield. This is about Litchfield's sphere of influence and the various ways he dove headfirst into the deep waters of the troubled teen industry. But before he could be at the helm of an international industry, he had to start locally. The stories you will hear in the following episode are the personal allegations and accounts of individuals who have attended one of these programs. All experiences, views, and opinions are their own.
Last week, we uncovered important details about Robert Litchfield's childhood as part of our quest to better understand how he would end up launching one of the most notorious networks of troubled teen programs. Robert Litchfield had his own personal history of institutionalization in his family. His father, Walter, had a nervous breakdown and spent time in a mental hospital. Then, one of his brothers was also sent away to a state-run facility, where he underwent shock therapy because he was seen as too much of a risk to the other children in the Litchfield family.
Litchfield's life was just one part of the story. We also heard some survivors talk about their experiences at Casa by the Sea, a facility in Mexico. Here's what Chelsea Feiler had to say.
WASP was a network of specialty programs. I would say mostly focused on providing behavior modification for troubled teens. Now, some of these programs were more geared towards wilderness boot camp experience, or a little bit more towards the therapeutic realm. At least that's the way that they market themselves. But realistically, what we were experiencing in this program was a very extreme form of behavior modification. Specifically, I think that it was based on aversion therapy. And that's pretty much the theory that if you can punish a child enough, eventually they'll learn.
Today, we're going to hear more about Litchfield's beginnings in the troubled teen industry and a program that would leave some people forever impacted. After returning home from a volunteer mission, Litchfield began working at Provo Canyon School, the same school listeners heard Paris Hilton discuss in season one. Over time, he moved his way up the leadership ladder. He would later take aspects from Provo Canyon and integrate them into his network of WASP facilities, all while keeping his family and confidants close in his endeavors. But before he could dive right into the deep end of opening his own programs for troubled teens, he needed a test run.
While Litchfield was still working at Provo Canyon School, he called his brother-in-law, Dan Peart, and convinced him to open a program on Peart's property. Peart's land was located in the high plains of Randolph, Utah, a town over 6,000 feet above sea level and with a population of about 500 people.
It's a really small town, about 1 square mile, a Mormon settlement dating back to the late 19th century. The town website calls it a land of extremes. And in this town was a long-established ranching family, the Peart's, who had lived in Randolph for generations. Dan Peart was the youngest, and in the late 80s, he and his new bride, Donna, were struggling to keep the ranch afloat. The following is an excerpt from a Utah State University Special Collections and Archives oral history titled Ranch Family Documentation, recorded in 2011. The speaker is Dan Peart.
You know, if you wanted a ranch, you had to have another outside source of income. And ours, we started a youth program probably like 25 years ago. And that helped us, you know, so we was able to ranch. It was right after my wife and I were first married. In fact, the ranch was struggling. We didn't know if we'd even be able to hang on to it.
Dan shares that his sister's husband had presented a possible solution for their financial difficulties. Who was his sister's husband? None other than Robert Litchfield.
And I had a brother-in-law that was working down at Provo Canyon Boys School. And he told us before, you know, you ought to look at doing this. And so we did and thought, well, okay, you come up and do it. We got the ranch. You get the kids and come on up and do it. And he worked all summer and he ended up having two that was going to come. And this is about September. And he says, well, you know, it's not really enough for me to quit my job and do them. Do you guys want to take these kids and try it? And we go, sure. How difficult can it be? And so it was mainly my wife and I, and anyway, we did it and learned the hard way, and we just kind of grew, and as we did, we hired people and professionals.
Peart and his wife began accepting teens at Majestic Ranch while still in the early phases of developing the program. Dan Peart's explanation in his own words during his oral history of how and why he entered into the industry gives us a sense of the almost casual nature in which he approached opening Majestic Ranch. Hearing him recount it over 20 years later is telling. Ultimately, the Peart's were ranchers, not psychologists or behaviorists. But nonetheless, parents trusted their marketing materials and started shipping children their way. They brought in their first kid around 1986. Boys from the ages of 8 to 18 were shipped in from around the country. In the oral history, we hear Dan Peart confirming our point. These weren't just local kids being sent to a nearby program. These were kids from around the country. Here's Dan.
They came from all over the United States. Mostly, when we first started, most of them, probably 90% of them come from California. And then as years went on, they come from all over, but still California was a big part, Washington.
And one of the first youth to arrive was a young boy named Tony.
Tony grew up in Southern California. He was really young when his parents divorced and doesn't remember much about the time before he went to live with his dad. What he does remember is an environment that could be described as chaotic at best.
Early on, my father got a divorce from my mother, I'm told, when I was 6 months. I'm told that she tried to keep me and she was doing Avon or something for money and it just wasn't working out for her. My dad told her in order for him to take me that he wanted her to sign over full custody, and she did so.
But life with his father brought its own set of challenges.
Being with my dad, he owned his own construction company. I remember being around a lot of construction workers. So I picked up a filthy mouth right away. And, you know, they taught me bad habits and things. And then he had a steady string of girls coming through.
One of these women would become Tony's new stepmother. Tony shares that he and his new stepmom had difficulty from the very beginning.
She started pounding on me. I distinctly remember her hitting me, smacking me. It was always in places that didn't leave bruises. She was very strategic about it. I just fucking didn't stick up for myself enough. You know, I didn't speak up about it.
After a few months, things sort of spiraled. Tony took the abuse until he couldn't anymore. He snapped.
There were three incidences where I pulled a knife on her. The first time she walked up to me and took it out of my hand. The second time she threatened to call the cops. The last time I was doing homework and I had a really, really, really hard time doing homework. And she started pounding on me with a cooking spoon and she broke the cooking spoon over my back. I grabbed a knife. She started going for the phone. I distinctly remember grabbing a fork and throwing it at her, and it hit the couch. I don't remember if it stuck in the couch, but it bounced off pretty damn hard. And she called the cops. I started moving my way down the street. Cops showed up, grabbed me, decided to scare me straight. Nobody ever bothered to take my shirt off and see if I had any bruises or just to ask me. I mean, I'm a 9-year-old kid, and why am I fighting so damn hard?
If the cops had taken the extra time to ask Tony how he was or to look at his body, things could have been completely different. Instead, his dad and stepmom shipped him off. Over the next several years, Tony says he would be sent to several different treatment programs before finally ending up in the mountains of Utah. And that feeling of being silenced and not listened to would continue on throughout the years.
My parents told me we were going on vacation, and they packed me up, and we drove for like 2 days. And I got to this place. They said, well, we're just going to go ahead and leave you here. At the time, everybody was chopping wood, and they handed me an axe and put me to work.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
According to Tony, he and his peers, the students, were subjected to hard labor. Tony was only 14 years old when he got there, but he felt that he was doing the work of a grown adult to keep Majestic Ranch's grounds tidy.
So the ranch itself was Dan Peart's ranch, and he had two large pieces of property that stretched, like the highway actually ran through the center of the property. And his father's property was the north side of the road, and his property was the south side of the road. There was a husband and wife that was there to run the house. They would cook us a meal large enough to serve us all. And then we would go out and run fence, run barbed wire fence, or dig post holes, cut down wood.
From the sound of it, the teens weren't the only ones doing the work of somebody above their pay grade. While Dan Peart and his wife may have hired professionals, former employees have previously alleged, including in at least one affidavit filed in a 2005 lawsuit against Wasp and Majestic Ranch, that they did not receive any formal training in certain areas like mental health. However, Wasp and the Peart's denied the allegations, and that lawsuit was ultimately dismissed before any findings of wrongdoings were made.
Brittany worked as a dorm parent at Majestic Ranch for 2 years in her late teens and early 20s. She drove over 2 hours every few days to work. She was in charge of looking after the kids, living with them day in and day out. She was only a few years older than the teens she was supposed to be parenting. Here's Brittany explaining to us her personal experience at the ranch.
Well, I definitely felt it was secluded from anything out in the middle of nowhere in Randolph, Utah. The nearest town, like another little baby town, was 20 minutes away. And then the nearest town that maybe had a Walmart and a big store was an hour and a half away. So this ranch was in the middle of nowhere. No hospitals, no clinics, no stores, nothing. You pull in, and the first thing you see when you pull in this dirt road is there was a field on your side, just an empty field. And then you had the Peart's house in front of you, right on the property. And then they had like module homes that they had converted into look like cabins a little bit. And then you had in the very back, you had this big, big building, and it had a gym in the center. And then on the sides of it, you had four separate units that would house the kids.
And according to Brittany, it wasn't just running fences and cutting wood, as Tony described. She alleges that there were times when the great outdoors became a vehicle of punishment. When children didn't follow the rules, staff would use an intervention known at the program as ADAPT.
We had something called ADAPT, and that was used for when the kids misbehaved. And so if a kid was acting out, you would say, hey, so-and-so, I'm sending this kid to ADAPT. They're coming over to you. So that kid would go out. And depending on whatever they were doing that day for ADAPT, you know, then that's where the kid would be sent. And sometimes it was to the maneuver pile to shovel manure and just stand in the poop pile and just shovel poop. Until that staff member running ADAPT felt that they were done. And a lot of the kids didn't want to shovel poop. Nobody wants to stand and shovel poop, you know? So the kids sometimes would throw poop at the staff, or they would, you know, sit in it. They would just choose to sit in it, or they'd rub it all over their clothes, their face, their hair, and just get dirty in it. We also had a little boy, I think he was 8, and you know, he was always causing a ruckus. And he was so young, you know, that's just what little kids do. But I remember him sitting on a milk crate from sunup to sundown out in the middle of the field. like one of those plastic milk crates. That was his seat. Randolph, Utah gets in the negatives. So to be sitting out there in the freezing cold like that is insane. But I remember this poor boy sitting out there all day long from sunup to sundown, just on a milk carton. You know, he wasn't behaving in some way, shape, or form, or he did something, and that was part of his punishment. Was sitting on a milk crate in the middle of the field with nothing.
Punishment. This is a word you'll hear throughout this season. These punishments were nothing like getting grounded and losing computer privileges. It sounded much worse. Brittany paints a serious picture, sitting on a crate from sunup to sundown, exposed to the elements for hours at a time. How do you discipline a child for acting their age? Brittany claims that the young kids would be put to work, doing work far better suited for a grown man, much less a 14-year-old boy like Tony.
They would go on a 7-day trek, and it was called Sheep Trail. They would go on a 7-day trek with ranchers. They were Dan Peart's hired ranchers. And the kids would go with only one staff member, one of our staff member, and the ranchers out on this 7-day sheep trail. And they would go herd sheep on horses that were barely broken.
Here's Tony again, explaining his personal experience on one of those treks.
They had brought me out there. There were horses already there. This was my first time riding a horse, and I was just, here you go, on the horse you go. And I had done something wrong, so they'd taken my saddle, and they told me not to ride the horse. And I was leading the horse, and there were sheep that were strays that they wanted me to get. Well, if you want me to get the sheep, you know, they're running away from me. They're not running where you want me to get them. So I jumped on the horse without a saddle. And I hear this man scream, "Get off that horse." I wasn't going to chase the sheep without the horse. So I just stopped, let go of the horse, started walking. He fucking came over, got off his horse, grabbed me, throw you down to the ground, sit on you. And they just sit on you until you were done being sat on, until you had no more fight left in you.
And in our interview, Tony wasn't shy about sharing his desire at times to defend himself. But wouldn't anyone in the same situation, much less at 14 years old? Where is the dignity? We mentioned before how the WASP methodology was based in behavior modification, but how effective was it for the kids?
It turns out that even some of the administrators who were employed by WASP affiliates seemed to disagree with the procedures in place. As we can hear in this 48 Hours clip from 1998, a director for another WASP program, not Majestic Ranch, stated it so simply when he said,
"This program is clearly non-therapeutical."
The fact that this official went on national television and made that comment is telling. In addition to the clear statement that the program was, quote, non-therapeutical, the staff had very little to work with.
Brittany alleged that the staff at Majestic Ranch received very little information about the kids who were enrolled there.
We took all kinds of kids. Any like sort of kids were there. We never got backgrounds of like, hey, this kind of kid's coming with this sort of background. We never got anything like that. We learned about the kids when they got there, and they came at all hours of the day. They could come in the middle of the night. They could come in the morning, anytime.
But she didn't feel she was trained enough to correctly deal with the kids they received. She was 18 or 19 at the time. She hardly had the tools to help them in any real way.
I don't remember them asking me anything about having any type of background. You know, the only background I would have had was like daycare, you know, working with young kids.
And she noticed a trend among the families who placed their children at Majestic Ranch.
I noticed that a lot of the parents would be going through divorces, or they, you know, and all of the kids' parents seemed to have a lot of money because this was a private ran facility. So the parents had to pay out of pocket to have their kids here. I mean, I feel that if the parents called and said they had a teen that was acting out, wasn't listening, you know, seemed to be a troubled teen, then the ranch would take them.
Tony was at Majestic Ranch for 2 years before he was sent home. And he says he still struggles with the memories and effects of his time spent at Majestic Ranch. Shortly after returning home, he met a young woman who would eventually become his wife. And now, he has his own family and works hard every day to make sure they don't experience anything like he did all those years ago.
I went to my doctor once and told him, and I finally broke down and I started shaking, and he straight up told me, because he's a Navy doctor, he straight up told me, he's like, you very much so exert the symptoms of someone with PTSD. I mean, I blew out my back. I had black and blue marks still to this day up and down my lower spine. No education and no ability to do anything physical. It's made life extremely hard. My wife can't sleep in the same room with me because I scream at night and I flop around in the bed at night. So, I mean, there's a lot of anger.
Given what Tony just told us, let's flash forward. Would survivors of Majestic Ranch ever receive justice for their alleged abuse?
In 2005, Majestic Ranch was investigated following allegations of abuse and unsanitary conditions. According to reporting at the time, local law enforcement, led by the Rich County Sheriff and Utah's Division of Child and Protective Services, concluded that most allegations lacked credibility, and while, quote, non-desirable, were not considered abusive. At the time, an employee of Majestic Ranch spoke to a local paper and described how the conditions of the facility resulted in their resignation, though Majestic and WASP executives repeatedly denied allegations of wrongdoing or abuse. This wasn't the first scrutiny Majestic Ranch faced. It had been investigated at least twice before for similar allegations. In one instance, a Majestic Ranch staff member was arrested for several counts of alleged child abuse. That staff member, however, maintained their innocence and was not found guilty of any crimes. A newspaper article that came out around the same time reported that the prosecutor dropped many of the charges after one of the victims recanted their statement, and another student's parents did not make them available to testify at the hearing.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
a judge dropped the rest of the charges. But perhaps the most shocking is that that staff member apparently remained employed by Majestic Ranch all while facing these charges. Based on the records we could find, Majestic Ranch seemed to have closed around 2007. Another school called Old West Ranch Academy, with ties to the Peart family, eventually reopened at the same address a few years later, before records show it officially closed in 2019. No matter the allegations, so many details matter when it comes to charging, trying, and convicting someone. And while it is the bedrock principle of the American justice system that everyone is innocent until proven guilty, oftentimes with this industry, justice seems to sway to the benefit of the defendants. And we hope by the end of this season, we can truly understand why.
From what we've heard up to this point this season, we know Litchfield wanted to focus on behavior modification rather than psychiatry, like at Provo Canyon. If he was after experiences, as he described it, then a fateful meeting with two men, Duane Smotherman and David Gilcrease, would pave the way for some of the most horrific allegations we've heard. After leaving Provo, Litchfield encountered a concept that would become the crux of his program model, something that some survivors would recall as one of the most traumatizing aspects of their stays. This was a pivotal moment that would redefine the very essence of his facilities. Before we can get into any of these allegations from survivors, it's necessary to understand the background and genesis of Litchfield's relationship with Duane and David, because it sets the stage for what's to come. On a mild day in November 1988, a small newspaper in St. George, Utah, released an announcement that a seminar to, quote, help participants make winning life choices was being held at Southern Utah State College. The seminar was called Keys to Success. And this seminar changed everything.
In 1988, Duane Smotherman was a corporate trainer from Arizona and had spent two decades of his life offering self-improvement courses to everyone from entry-level employees to C-suite execs. Here's Duane.
People always ask what I do, and by training, what I do is I'm an industrial psychologist, and I do a great deal of work in the area of coaching, training, and consulting.
He shared that his interest in psychology started in high school and followed him to college. But according to him, it wasn't until a visit to a VA hospital that he became dismayed at the treatment he saw and decided to dedicate his life to helping people. At the time, there were all types of personal fulfillment and self-help organizations springing up.
And during the 70s, the mid to latter part of the 70s, training companies proliferated all over the country. And there were several companies there. You know, there was LifeSpring, there was Est, there was Actualizations, there was, you know, Context. There was a whole plethora of different companies that were really springing up. And people were drawn to these trainings like crazy. You know, of course, the 70s, the me generation, everybody wanted to check out me, you know. And so they wanted to look at, you know, their beliefs, their attitudes, their assumptions, their behaviors, their behavioral patterns. And it was fascinating to me. So I just jumped ship with all the clinical work and went into this work. Ended up, you know, getting involved with a personal development company at the time called LifeSpring, which was about personal effectiveness, personal development, behavioral modification, things like that.
LifeSpring, a large group awareness training program founded by a man named John Henley in 1974. Large group awareness training, often abbreviated as LGAT, is a type of program aimed at enhancing personal development. These large group seminars typically use a combination of lectures, discussions, and exercises in a group setting to help participants explore their beliefs, behaviors, and relationships. The goal is often to bring about personal transformation, self-awareness, and improved life skills. However, these programs were and can be controversial, with many critics questioning the confrontational methods and effectiveness.
The trainings took place in empty churches, conference halls, and amphitheaters. They were deeply immersive, confrontational, and extremely structured. Some participants did report feelings of increased self-confidence and happiness at the end of these seminars. But later, studies would question whether these were placebo effects. In fact, a 1983 participant observation study on LifeSpring by American psychologists Janice Haken and Richard Adams found that although participants often experience a heightened sense of well-being as a consequence of the training, the phenomenon is essentially pathological, meaning that in the program studied, the training systematically undermines ego functioning and promotes regression to the extent that reality testing is significantly impaired. In layman's terms, participants often found it hard to think clearly and stay grounded in reality after their training. There was a fine line between breakthroughs and breakdowns.
When Duane attended LifeSpring, it was still relatively new.
So when I took the training, in the mid-70s, and I was so enthralled by what I saw. I was so enthralled by the results and the impact it had on me, on other people. I was really, really fascinated by the process itself, because it was something very different than what I'd studied before. Because, you know, I'd come from basically an educational clinical background, and this was very much of an experiential, process-oriented situation.
Duane believed in the methodology, so he became a facilitator. After a few years, he ended up teaming up with David Gilcrease, another facilitator. Here's Duane again.
Myself and my old business partner, my former business partner, David, we had a training company in Salt Lake City called Excel Training Corporation, EXCEL. And we were doing the general public personal development work, you know, the trainings. We had a building with offices and training rooms and the whole deal. And so I was spending half my time in Utah and half my time in Arizona.
And we believe that it was one of their seminars in November of 1988 that Robert Litchfield attended. Narvin Litchfield, Robert's brother, who we heard from in episode one, shares that his brother was immediately taken with them.
He got involved with a group of seminars that he had personally got involved with and thought that they had made some real changes in his productivity in his life. And it basically was sort of experiential learning. And he thought that that was powerful enough and would help people get clarity on what they wanted to do with their life mission, et cetera. But he wanted to share that with everybody. So what he did is he literally hired three of their top facilitators in the seminars. And we had these seminars that nobody else had.
Here's what Duane says happened after meeting Litchfield.
The owners and founders of the WASP programs came into our training as participants. And they, unbeknownst to us, we had no idea. Unbeknownst to us, you know, they had all these schools and this organization, but they came to us. So the CEO came to us, the founder, and said, is there a way that we can incorporate this work into these schools that work with teens at risk? Is there a way that we can create a behavioral element, a modification element to work with kids?
David and Duane agreed to work with Litchfield and created a series of seminars called TASKS, Teen Accountability, Self-Esteem, and Keys to Success.
The owners and founders of WASP worked with us for 2 years to develop a series of trainings that we could integrate into the schools, because the schools were, the kids could earn their educational, you know, educational credits in the programs. So they could get their diplomas and so forth and so on. There was graduation ceremonies and the whole thing. So we did not work for, if you will, the programs themselves. We were not employees of WASP. We were, if you will, consultants. We were the behavioral education element. So they contracted with us to come into the schools and disseminate these seminars. And quite frankly, it was a major success. And so before you knew it, we were doing the trainings all over the country, East Coast to West Coast, then overseas in Prague, the Czech Republic, over in Jamaica, over in Costa Rica, in Mexico, and even in Samoa, in the South Pacific. And so we were traveling all over the place in delivering these seminars. And it just kind of just amped up. It just kind of, you know, it just rolled. It just rolled. It was a snowball.
Dr. Stephen Hassan is an expert on undue influence brainwashing and unethical hypnosis, and the author of the best-selling book, Combating Cult Mind Control. He tours the world conducting lectures and workshops, helping people understand the power of mind control. He believes that LifeSpring seminars were cultic and dangerous.
Anyway, LifeSpring, it was one of these large group awareness trainings, these types of group process things where hypnotic techniques are being used. They're not run by mental health professionals. The people aren't pre-screened. ABC did a documentary showing abuses in LifeSpring where people were being told to identify their fear and then confront their fear. So, for example, they showed the story of a young man who was afraid of water, and he dove into a moving river. The only problem was he'd never learned to swim, and he died.
Stories like this were common among former LifeSpring followers, but the founder played these down, insisting that his trainings had clear disclaimers that warned off those who were mentally unstable and unsuited for their methods. Despite some of the controversy, the seminar business was booming, and Litchfield would take these lessons with him to his other schools.
Robert Litchfield, armed with the new seminars and the learnings he'd acquired from seeing his brother-in-law, Dan Peart, run Majestic Ranch, was set to revolutionize his approach to behavior modification. He envisioned seminars inspired by LifeSpring, tailored not just for troubled teens, but their parents, too. Now, he just needed a facility to call his own. In 1988, Robert Litchfield arrived in Leverkin, Utah, and bought a building at the edge of town. He opened the doors of his very first program. He named it Cross Creek Manor for Girls. Kirby would attend this program. We will hear her story next week on Trapped in Treatment.
He liked to have little object lessons. And one of his lessons was one day he said that I was a doormat. And in a high traffic area in the rec center where people had to walk from going from place to place, he made me lie on the floor all day with a sign that said doormat. And when people walked by, they had to step on me and look me in the eye.
All of our efforts to reach Robert Litchfield, Dan Peart, and David Gilcrease for comment were unsuccessful, and they did not respond to our requests for comment. From our research, none of them have ever been charged with or found guilty of any crime stemming from allegations of abuse or in connection with WASP or any of the schools affiliated therewith.
Hey everyone, it's Paris. Thanks for listening to episode 2. There's so much more to learn. To receive exclusive content about Trapped in Treatment and all things Paris Hilton, sign up at the link in the episode description. Follow us on Instagram at Trapped in Treatment. And make sure to listen to all our episodes on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.